This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Matt Patrick, Brett will stop on by. Kevin Featherly is going to stop on by. Robert Burrill is going to stop on by. And then I'm going to take off for a week. I got to take a little bit of vacation. This has been, it's kind of that time of year for me. Usually I'm up north and at some point here, and I like to get up a little bit and go in there. I got to go catch this weekend, the fun of the Northland. A soccer tournament in Duluth for one of my kids. You know what the worst part about doing that is? And don't get me wrong. I have gone to baseball tournaments. Where did we go? It was past Mankato. It was out in the southwestern part of the state. We were out there. I left Minneapolis, and Minneapolis was like, you know, still like 85. And I got out there, it was like 96. And there wasn't a dang tree to be seen for miles. And we had baseball. They had baseball. They had three games on Saturday. Those kids came off the field. They were exhausted. I was exhausted. I was just sitting there. And, you know, you get out there. So you can get, you know, rough weather, you know, that goes the other way. But Duluth, that's one where it's 85 in the cities, and you drive up there, and I hope you've brought your winter gear because, you know, that can be a winter game up there. That's a little bit of an eye-opener. I actually think when UMD has done really good, University of Minnesota Duluth has done really well in football, it's been years when they have a lot of these southern teams that come up there, and they are just not expecting that on Lake Superior. They're not expecting to get up there. Really quick, hey, boy. So we ended at a winning streak of five. The Twins lost this afternoon to the Cincinnati Reds. 10-7 was the final. Who was our pitcher that decided in the, was it the eighth inning or ninth, that gave up a three-run shot that we'd come back and tied the game, 7-7, and one of our pitchers decided to give up a meatball I could have knocked into St. Paul. So was it Robles?
Yeah, it was Robles in the ninth inning.
You know, I don't know who our closer is, but I wouldn't put him in. How did we pick every rough pitcher? How does every pitcher we have go through a bad cycle now? Well, they didn't come into a camp trained. Did you see one other quick Twins note? And I know we're not a sports station, but I wanted to make sure I point this out because it's something I made a point of this morning. Last night, Byron Buxton in his, was it third game or second game back from the IR?
It was his third and about three innings.
Three innings. He is standing in the batter's box. Now, Byron Buxton is his own worst enemy. He just, and I know he says, I play hard all the time, blah, 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 blah. You don't run through walls in the outfield, Bump Bailey. You just don't do that, okay? You got to actually understand you are going to consistently hurt yourself if you run at hard things or do foolish things. Because of my son, watched a lot of baseball over the last 12 years of my life. What he did last night was the Cincinnati Reds pitcher pitched an inside pitch. And I have seen this before where, you know, sometimes an inside pitch comes in, it's going to hit the batter, and the batter frantically tries to get out of the way, and there's nothing he can do. He's going to get plucked. Bad luck or intentional, whatever the case, it does happen. Byron Buxton, all he had to have done last night is lean back slightly, and that ball would have not hit the back of his hand and broke his finger. Instead, he was the tough guy, high school kid. You're going to pitch inside me. Well, I'm not scared. Bang. Ow! And to watch him, I mean, first of all, how dumb are you, dude? You get paid. You just came off the IR. Someone pitches inside. Get out of the way so you don't get a stupid injury, Mr. Glass. Ugh. That's his nickname, Mr. Glass. He is Mr. Glass, absolutely. But then just to watch him, because he was being tough guy, I'm not going to lean away from your pitch. I'm not afraid of you. And it got his hand and broke his finger. So now he's out, 6 weeks with a broken pinky? Great. Thanks, Byron. But then he's going up to first base. Do you see? Like, I'm okay. It's like trying to play it down like he didn't just do something stupid like a high school kid. You know, the future of that team, the team is built around a guy who spends 85% of the season on the injured reserve. And I don't know if you understand math, but that's not going to be a winning formula. And so, this is going to be a long, long summer. As a Twins fan, this is just brutal. I appreciate Minnesota United. We got a game tomorrow night. They better not. Do not lose that game to Austin. Don't lose that game to Austin. That's an expansion club. You tied last time. For goodness sakes, have some pride in yourself. Embarrass that team. Send them home crying. Ugh. That's what you need to do. You're a better sports mind than me. Any thoughts?
Well, training camp opens for the Vikings in July.
Has Aaron Rodgers gone away from the Packers yet?
Unfortunately, he has not.
Well, he's not going to play. I don't think he's really going to have his heart into it anyway. He doesn't seem to really want to play for there anymore. So anyway, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Promise you, last of the sports takes. By the way, and also, if I can make one thing, I go back to the first thing I made when I'm going to do some vacation. I am going to spend a lot of time going around the Twin Cities and doing things. There's a lot of things that are opened up. And trust me, I have loved going out to the parks. I have loved going hiking. I love going the trails. I'm going to go out and do some of the fun attractions we have in town. We have a lot of them. They're now opening up. I want to encourage everyone to get on out and experience this great city, this great state. Get out there and enjoy, because now that things are coming back, we need to support these businesses and keep these institutions going, okay? So museums, parks, the amusement parks, Mall America, wherever you want to go, go there, have some fun, get a little food, help support the city, and let's keep this economy going, okay? Good. And Duluth, I'll be seeing you this weekend. For parts of it, at least. I don't want to stay up. I might drive back and drive. It's a 2-hour drive up and back. But I don't know if I'm going to stay up in Duluth both nights. I like my bed.
That's also a lot of money to stay in Duluth this time of year.
Shockingly. You know, I'd say. And who doesn't love 52 degrees? 952-946-6205. Mary Kiffmeyer needs to explain something to us. If we only learn history by naming things and putting statues up, why did everyone forget who in the heck Mr. Dite was? Come on, Mayor. This is your history class. I mean, everyone that lives near Dite Avenue in Minneapolis should know exactly who Dite is. Because that's how you say we learn history. Isn't that how Republicans say we learn history? You learn history by looking at a statue. Statues teach you history. Place names. Naming a street after someone. Because that's always, you know, when I am out driving around, you know, nothing gets me more than the historical provenance of the intersection of Stalin and Hitler. Oh, boy. Thank God we named those streets, because would I know anything about World War II without the intersection of Stalin and Hitler in Minneapolis? Wait, we don't have that? That's right, because we generally don't name streets after horrible people because we don't want to legitimize horrible people. A petition has been going on. Minneapolis may rename a street that memorializes a former city council member best known for championing the eugenics and Adolf Hitler, a.k.a. the modern Republican voter. The petition to rename Dite Avenue, D-I-G-H-T, has gathered 750 signatures since June 1st in the support of the city council member Andrew Johnson, whose South Minneapolis ward includes the street. The avenue is named for Charles F. Dite. You can guess what the F stands for. A physician who served 4 years on the city council shortly after he left office in 1918. According to a 1984 article in Minnesota History, Dite contributed to the passing of an ordinance requiring milk pasteurization. Wow, that's one way to whiten up the history, isn't it? He followed up his time in public office by spearheading pro-eugenics initiatives. He drove the creation of the Minnesota Eugenics Society in 1923, championed a forced sterilization law that was passed by the Minnesota legislature in 1925. He also offered effusive support for Adolf Hitler. Yes, that Adolf Hitler planned to sterilize those with mental disabilities. Yeah, and you heard correctly. Yeah, what I just said. Noam Accord, executive director of the Minnesota Disability Justice Network, said he started the position because the neighborhood is diverse and the name could be hurtful to residents. In a community that's been traumatized, making some of these more simplest strides to address the historical and generational trauma that people face, I think it's a really good step forward. Johnson said he's pursuing the name change, but his staff is drafting a letter to residents in the area seeking their feedback. He said he has some alternative names of notable people, but would not share them on Monday. Having a street named after you is a huge honor. Johnson said, I think we have an obligation to regularly consider how we are honoring people. I think we do, too. But, you know, how can the history of this guy be lost if we have a street named after Mary Kiffmeyer? I mean, that's how you guys learn history, right? Oh, that's just, a red herring that you're putting out there to basically kind of, I get it there. So 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Patrick, did you hear the delightful bit of audio that we had of one Mr. House Minority Leader Kurt Daut from the House floor basically throwing a temper tantrum like a petulant five-year-old? Did you hear that?
I did hear that.
All right. I think we jazzed it up a little bit here, so let's play it for it once again. This is the person you hear screaming like a howler monkey. That is actually the House Minority Leader Kurt Daut, one-time Speaker of the Minnesota House, throwing a temper tantrum on the House floor.
Point of order, Madam Speaker. Point of order, Madam Speaker.
State your point of order, Representative Winkler.
Point of order, Madam Speaker.
State your point
Madam
of order.
Madam Speaker.
State your point
Madam
of
Speaker.
Order, Representative
Madam
Winkler.
Speaker. Madam Speaker. You already determined in this discussion that it was okay to interrupt one member with another member.
Representative Daut, Representative Winkler rose a point of order. I am going to hear his point of order. When you rose to a point of order, you did not state one. Representative
Winkler. He also has not stated one. Point of order, Madam Speaker. I want to be recognized.
Point of order, Representative
Winkler. Point of order, Madam Speaker. I want to be recognized.
Please state your point of order, Representative Winkler.
Madam Speaker, I rise to
point of order.
Point of order under Mason section.
Point of order, Madam Speaker. Point of order. Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker.
Representative Winkler has the floor.
Madam Speaker.
Representative, you are out of order, Representative.
No, I'm not. I'm trying to be recognized. This is how you get recognized.
Representative Winkler,
state your
point of order. Representative Winkler has the floor.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Winkler has the floor.
I had the floor and you recognized him.
Representative Winkler has the floor.
And you've determined that that's okay now.
Representative Winkler has the floor. Please state your point of order.
Madam Speaker, I rose to a point of order under Mason's
section.
Oh. Sad Charlie Brown music. Wow. I want to make sure we point out something, and I said, Patrick, can we get that and put that up on the SoundCloud page a little bit later on? Everything is better with the Curb Your Enthusiasm music behind it. The only other song that we could have put back there is either Yakety Sax from Benny Hill, but no, I think we went Curb Your Enthusiasm was the better call on that one. Nicely done, guys. Thank you to Brett and to Patrick on that. I made this point this morning about Daut and the rest of these Republicans, if I can make this. The first day of the special session, Eric Mortensen, yes, that Eric Mortensen, the man I think I refer to affectionately as Representative Skintech, he is the representative in Shakopee, I mean the extreme far-right representative, who is now persona non grata within his own party. And they don't like him, or at least they say they don't like him. Well, on the first day of the special session, Eric Mortensen and his supporters showed up really going after the Republicans, saying, how dare you even think about working with the Democrats? You should force this agenda or shut the state down. And that's kind of the mentality. And as much as we had Osmek was bashing on him and other Republicans were bashing on him, when you look at the behavior of the House Republicans, it's clear they are terrified of Eric Mortensen and supporters of that far right, because that's what gets Republican voters going today. That's what they like. That's the energy they like. That's the mentality they like. They like that far right extremists never work with the other side. That is who these people appeal to. And I think they're terrified. And so when you look at the dog and pony show these guys are putting on, and you listen, that's the House Minority Leader screaming like a child at a grocery store that wants a candy bar. But at the end of the day, they all stopped and they started passing bills. So what it is they're just putting forward the minimal effort they can to make it look like, see, we're not working with them. And are they watching still? No. Okay, we're going to pass these bills. I think they're just terrified of Mortensen and his crew. I'm dead serious. I think that the Republican Party of Minnesota, and I'm dead serious too, I think that those guys are terrified of Mortensen. Because even though I don't think Eric Mortensen is going to win his seat back, that side of the Republican Party controls who gets nominations. And the last thing that the Republican Party wants is a guy they just threw out of that party going into the suburban Republican districts and getting candidates to challenge all of these other Republicans who are loyal far more to Eric Mortensen and his supporters than they are to the Republican Party. Because then they've got zero chance at getting back that Minnesota House. And especially when redistricting happens, they're likely going to lose the Minnesota Senate and lose it badly. So I think that's what you're seeing there. I'll tell you what, when we come back, I want to get into a little bit more with the legislative stuff. A lot of things to get to this hour. Like I said, we've got some bigger stories coming up here in the next half hour. And Kevin Featherly and Robert Burrill in the 5. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And we'll play that to Kurt Dowd clip a little bit later on again. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. You know, yesterday we had Ricardo Lopez on from the Minnesota Reformer and talk about how the Republicans in the Senate, they had passed, Carla Bingham, the House rep, had come up with a great bill, which was basically this. Okay, Republicans don't like unions, but what they said is with the refinery, namely, and this has to do a lot with the Marathon refinery, where they've had some safety issues, where you clearly need to have some safety upgrades. And the workers, the union workers, are very upset about safety. And I think when we're talking refineries, we should be concerned about safety issues. And by the way, Republicans, Senate Republicans, I hope nothing bad happens out of that refinery. I hope there's no major explosions or an accident over there. Because you guys going out and taking out the safety bill for refinery workers and then something bad happens almost sounds as bad as when you guys pulled the Alex Smith Emergency Insulin Act and then people started dying because they could not afford insulin. And you guys, what, you send out Jeremy Munson to go, I got to Walmart and there's drugs. I'm not a doctor, but look. Yeah, good luck with that. But, hey, you know, having things like, I don't know, parties in November where everyone gets sick of coronavirus and you likely kill one of your own senators is on brand for you guys. So I guess stupid is just permeates your fiber anyway. But they went out there and they went to and went after this bill. Now, once again, the Senate had passed this, that enough Republican senators had jumped on and said, yeah, okay. Having safety protocols. And what it was is if you could go through the union trading program, but if you didn't want to, you could go through a trades program and learn safety protocols for the refinery. And so everyone would be up to safety protocols. It was a bipartisan popular bill. And by the way, very similar to the Alex Smith Emergency Insulin Act, where it passed. And then all of a sudden they brought it back and then forced all Republicans, including Scott Jensen, who's basically fallen off the edge, to basically vote against it so they could basically say, you know, we stopped it. Hey, pharmaceutical industry, where's our lobbying money? That sort of thing. That's at least that's how I interpreted it. And my guess is, and I said this when I saw them, there are three primary Republicans in the Senate, led by Paul Gazelka, the Senate Majority Leader, who pulled this bill after it had passed, sent it back down to committee, and then purged it from the bill. And then when they tried to add it on again, it was a party line vote, and they said, well, it doesn't pass. And my guess is it has to do with either donations the Republican Party of Minnesota has received or that money, the political party donations, or lobbying money they're hoping they'll get because they did this. That's kind of how they operate.
But needless to say, I want to make sure we understand this. This bill had passed. These sour grape jackasses in the Republican Senate basically said, no, it's not. We want to go down and bow down. We don't care about refinery safety. And yes, they did. Before they said, no, we care about it. No, you had the chance to show that, and you got rid of the refinery safety bill. So you do not care about refinery safety. You have said, sure, it can blow up. Who cares? That's your mentality. You do not care. Once again, Republicans on brand. But they did this, and it's just stupid because, you know, once again, it passed. And like I said, my guess is this is about lobbying money, and that's all it's about. The problem here is, frankly, Democrats, can I make a point here? You could do the same thing. And as a matter of fact, I think you could just not even try to hide it and just sort of say, well, if these guys want to play tit for tat, well, what we'll do is this. You guys pulled the refinery safety bill. You know what? You got this new lumber thing that you want to build in Itasca County. It requires the House to pass a bunch of things. We're going to send that back to committee and think about whether or not we keep that in the bill. Because I can tell you right now, Tomasoni, that traitorous jackass, and the rest of the Republican Party want that part. They want that passed. They want that lumber area built. And if you they come back, it's like, why are you doing this? Is this just revenge on the refinery safety bill? You say, yes, yes, it is. We're not killing the entire bill. We're just going to go through here. We've got some questions about this thing. And I'll tell you what, if the refinery safety bill gets reinstated in the Senate bill, we'll stop reviewing this bill and get it back on the floor. And there you go. And until that happens, until that refinery safety bill is passed again, well, maybe we have to consider pulling this wording out of this bill. And scene. And be that blunt. And be that, no, you guys want to be jerks, we can be jerks too. And because you know what? Most of the people that vote Democrat, I think that it's nice to get a few jobs in Itasca County and stuff like this. It's a major tax handout. There is an exception of the environmental review. As a matter of fact, I think that's all you really need to do. Is just reinstall the environmental review. Say, you know what? The environmental committee wants to take a look at this. Get Rick Hansen on this. Get Representative Rick Hansen and say, you know, maybe we should have an environmental review of this new lumber facility that's going to be in Itasca County. That's maybe what we should do. Yes, for 10 hours, Gazelka and every Republican will be bloviating like there is no tomorrow. How dare they? And which, if any journalist in town has any weight, the next thing is, well, didn't you guys do that to the refinery safety bill? And make them defend getting rid of safety protocols for people working in refineries. That would be a hoot. But I don't have any faith that most of the journalists, some journalists, I mean, Minnesota Reformer, Brianna Beerschbach, there's Dana Ferguson. I think that there are some people that would do that at question, but the Republicans know to avoid them. They go find the other guys I will not name that will basically push out their talking points. But needless to say, there's nothing they can do about it because the House has the same power as the Senate to do this. And you can say, you know what? You know, as soon as that refinery safety bill, Carla Bingham, you guys passed it once. I'm sure you can pass it again. And say, tick tock, because we're gonna actually change this to a full environmental review of the lumber. The new lumber business, the new thing. We're gonna put that through, and you got to pass that, or else. Because after 9 hours or 10 hours of Republican bloviating, they will quietly go back into the Senate. They will find the votes. They will pass the safety bill because they already did, and then the House Democrats can release that whatever agreement they had on that lumber facility. And scene. And done. You see, this is different than when Ingebrigtsen tried to hold up the environmental bill with clean cars. He didn't really have the authority to do that. And by the way, I want to say this about Bill Alaska fishing trip Ingebrigtsen. That dude, he screwed up. When he did that Alaska trip, I think he thought he was looking like a tough guy that was tough guy negotiating. He looked like he was aloof and did not care. And it forced Gazelka, I think, to force his hand saying, okay, we're releasing this.
That was a major screw-up. But this is different. This is a, you guys want to do this? Well, fine. Then our constituents want an environmental review on that lumber facility that's going to go in Itasca. And they know they can't get it through the House. They have to get it through the House. And if they say, well, we had a deal, you can look back at them and say, well, you passed that bill, for goodness sakes. Don't tell me you had a deal when you already had a deal and you basically double-crossed us on that. Stand up to them like they stand up to you. Because I can tell you what, there are a lot more things in the remaining bills that the Republicans want passed than the Democrats do. So if you play hardball with them, DFL, you might be able to get Carla Bingham's Refinery Safety Act reinstated and a few other things if they start getting a little twitchy. And when they come up and say, you guys are not fair, I said, wait a minute here. You're accusing us of playing the game like you, and we're unfair, so you're saying what you're doing is unfair. And have Paul Gazelka have the veins in that dude's midnight oil head start to pop because he doesn't have an answer for that. I get it, DFL. You're like, we're above that, and that's why we lose a lot. I'm not saying be mean. I'm not sweep the leg, Johnny. I'm just saying, oh, you want to do this? Well, we can do this review. Let's do an environmental review on that lumber facility. Because I guarantee you, 12 hours later, Republicans would try quietly as possible to pass that refinery safety bill, and this would be done. You know what? The Republicans like to play chicken, but the reality is they like to play chicken on issues that they can't win on, but they expect the Democrats to cave and... God bless them. The Democrats cave way too much. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update. When we do return, it is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. And get those mango pancakes, man. Tasty. And Powderhorn Park. That's actually, I might have to put that one up on the old radar while I'm on vacation here. I might head it over there. I love a good art show. That's one of the things that's really been hard is I would go to the art museums, especially in winter, and especially when it's cold. I'd be going to the art museums once a week, one of the museums, Wiseman, the Walker, MIA. I'd be, you know, some of the local stores. I just, yeah. So, you know, it's nice. Having art fairs back is nice. 952-946-6205. Minnesota coronavirus update for today. Tuesday, COVID-19 update from Minnesota Department of Health. 80 new cases. Only one new death, but once again, all our best to that family. So sorry for your loss. The state's death toll is 7,460 since the start of the pandemic. As of June 20th, the state reported more than 3,029,299 people have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, up only a little more than 1,000 compared to the day before. While 2,875 people have completed their vaccine series, the percentage of Minnesota population with at least one shot based on the age group. Once again, 12 to 15 is the lowest. And once again, I think these numbers do also include the 12, 11 and under. So I don't know. I mean, I think some of this is a bit skewed because, you know, 35, the 12 to 15 is a relatively small group. That's at 35. 16 and 17, also a relatively small group. That's 48. But the 18 to 49, that's 56. 50 to 64 is 71. And 65 plus, it's 90%. So overwhelmingly, 18 and over is well over 50%. So if those two small groups, the 12 to 15 and 16 to 17, are that low, how are that? Is that dragging down the rest of the numbers? You know what I mean? I think that they're putting in the 11 to 0 in there as well. So the total population is 54%. Now, once again, that doesn't, you know, that number seems to be pointing to me that they might be including those other kids, which is fine because that's total population, but they can't get vaccinated. So 51% of Minnesota's total population has completed the vaccination series. Minnesota Department of Health has a public dashboard to track that progress. Through June 21st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 114, down from 139 on June 18th. Of those hospitalized, 32 people were in intensive care, down from 44. 82 were receiving non-ICU treatment, down from 95. Hospital admissions involving COVID patients in Minnesota dropped to 223 on March 7th before rising, and then since the mid-April peak have been dropping
and falling. The 80% positivity rate on Monday update were from the 5,509 completed tests, creating a test positivity. Well, they don't have the rate listed here. That's you want to include, you want to put that in there. I think it was like 1.5. The positivity rate for Minnesota over the past 7 days is 1.45. I want to actually put out two things about this, though. Make sure you understand, and I'm going to make this plea once again. Please listen to me. I have a dear friend that just went home after 2.5 months of being in a hospital. I have a friend in England, actually a friend. She was a competitor. I've gotten to know her over the last few years. You know, just kind of a fringe friend, but I've talked to her every once in a while. She used to be she was on the Great British Baking Show one time. She's one of the cooks from there. I've gotten to chat with her. She has been sick on and off for months with this, having a heck of a time. And I have multiple people I know who have lost coworkers, friends, family to COVID. The cost of this is astronomical, the loss to lose someone to this disease. That person is gone, obviously. And once again, we had more people die from COVID-19 since the pandemic began than died of the same amount of people that died of cancer in 2019. And we all talk about cancer. Cancer is god awful. And you would think to yourself, if we had something brand new on the horizon that actually was wiping people out at the same rate as cancer, we'd have people, but we had some sort of vaccine, people would be scrambling for that. Imagine if we had a cancer vaccine. How long would it take for the state of Minnesota to have 100% people vaccinated against cancer? Don't get me wrong, we'd always have idiots that will sit there and say, I'm magnetized now, or, you know, I got a microchip. Uh-oh, Jeff Bezos is making me run an Amazon run. I mean, I get it. But you'd have a lot of the state. I mean, I made this comment about when it comes to cancer, if I said, if we all of a sudden, if the doctors of the world decided that all of a sudden Hostess Twinkies were the number one cure for cancer, Hostess would be the number one company on the planet tomorrow. It would. We go out of our way to do anything to fight cancer, but here we are, and we're slowing down on the vaccine. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And please, please, especially the people who are conservative, who are hate listening to me like now. Thanks for listening, by the way. I don't want you broke. I don't want you broke. I don't want you broke. I don't want you losing your home, your farm. I don't want you losing your car. I don't want you having to work 6 jobs to try to pay off medical bills for the next 10 years. I don't. I've been consistent on this. Please. As much as you want to say, well, we're getting past it. Yesterday, someone died. There is a family in the state that has lost a loved one to COVID-19. On even a good day, we lost someone here. 7,460 people in the state of Minnesota have died of coronavirus. And there's 80 new cases. And I should make sure we point out here, there's a pretty high positivity rate right now with tests, which means that people are going to get tested, know they're sick. Please, I beg of you. I beg of you. We got incentives to get you vaccinated. The fact that we're only really at 1,000 people a day getting a shot, that's a travesty. We have the ability to make you better. And yes, 3 million people in the state of Minnesota have been vaccinated. And no, we're not all stuck together like a bunch of magnet balls. That would be hilarious. We're all like one big pile. Ah, we're stuck to ding magnets. We're not. Please, please, be a big guy. Understand that this is, I don't want you in 5 years when all of a sudden you're out of the blue. What do you mean I've got coronavirus? I thought that was gone. And then all of a sudden you're in the hospital and you're in the ICU and you're there. And God forbid you die. I hope you survive. But you're there for 2 months and you come home and then the calls start coming. We have some bills you got to pay. I don't want that to happen to you. I don't want that to happen to you. I do not. Absolutely not. So please, get vaccinated if you can. I really do appreciate it. And so does everyone else. And your family will appreciate it too.
952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We have... all right. You ready? Everyone prepared? This gets ugly very quickly. So yes. Additional remains from the 36-year-old man were found Tuesday morning in the near the Mississippi River in Minneapolis, more than 3 miles from where the initial discoveries were made last week. Police investigators have been at East Franklin Avenue and West River Parkway since about 6:45 this morning collecting evidence. Police have yet to elaborate on the discovery. We will not be discussing what is most likely recently located, said police spokesman John Elder. The victim had been identified as Adam Richard Johnson of Minneapolis. Police have said that Johnson died recently and consider him to be a homicide victim. You're going to take that leap? The guy that you found in three different areas now. Homicide, you're saying. Okay, it wasn't a suicide? All right, thanks. No arrests have been announced. On Thursday, a passerby called 911 to report the discovery remains shortly before 9:30 a.m. behind the Ukrainian Cultural Center and the 300 block of Northeast Main Street, not far from the river. Later that day, police discovered more remains near 3rd Avenue Northeastern University. Family members have started an online fundraising campaign to help with the funeral and other expenses. Johnson leaves behind two small children, according to relatives. Johnson did not have a permanent address since moving out of a relative's home in Invergrove Heights a couple of weeks ago, said Tracy Marsh, who is married to his great uncle and is acting as a family spokesperson. There is no significance there in Johnson's life to the locations where his remains were found, she said. Marsh said Johnson grew up in Bloomington, Minneapolis, struggled with mental health illnesses and substance abuse for much of his life. She said his mother in Utah was arranging for him to move there enter treatment, but now his mother is now in Minnesota dealing with her son's death, she said. Very tragic case, very sad, very horrible case. I'm really hoping we have some understanding of something that happened here, because this sounds fairly nefarious in regards to this. I mean, we've had, unfortunately, there was a case of the guy that attacked the woman up and was in Fargo, that just kid walking home and she stabbed him. The guy stabbed her a whole bunch of times. He had the case up in St. Cloud, where the St. Cloud University, St. Cloud State professor was shot by it, clearly someone who was deranged. He had the case in Brooklyn Park, where the individual ran over a neighbor, and he was talking about voices. There just seems to be a lot of cases lately that we are seeing. And, of course, this case, my goodness, who is the psychopath behind this? We have a lot of cases right now where it seems like mentally compromised people are committing crimes. And I do want to ask the question, and once again, I am one of these people, I am for having treatment facilities for people that need help. And mental health illnesses should not be a stigma. They should be something we should eagerly address, because there is a desire for us as a society to have people that can function within society. And if they can't, then we have a facility that they can be safe and basically we can work on their condition. I think that that's an important thing. But did the last year with the coronavirus, did we just open up a lot of these facilities and let people out that shouldn't have been out? Because a few of these people, it sounded like, were in treatment facilities and had been released. And I'm concerned about what this trend leads to. And I said this with the Brooklyn Park case, where the guy ran down the person in the mailbox. You know, he seemed to be displaying enough compromised mental state that how in the world was he released? The guy in Buffalo that shot up the medical clinic. Clearly mentally compromised, but of course, Republicans made sure he had his guns. Can't stop the guns, can you? Anyway, it's concern, and it should be a concern, because I understand the pandemic was rough, but if we have people that should not be part of society, they shouldn't be released into society. I think we can make that understandment, right? That's a pretty basic thing. 952-946-6205. Delta Airlines is about to get sued into oblivion, and unfortunately, I want to make sure I'm very clear. Unfortunately, it does sound like they were in the wrong here, although they were trying to do the right thing. I'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll get to that. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to praise airlines, because I think airlines, there was a great story of
was it a girl in Utah or was it here? I can't remember. There was two girls showed up at an airport to take a one-way flight to New York that clearly did not add up. And the ticker counter person, I can't remember what airline it was, but the ticker counter person thought this was weird, figured out that there was someone who had paid for, that had gotten to know them online on social media, had paid for their one-way tickets, and it was a classic human trafficking story that these girls were going to fly there thinking they're about to go be wined and dined and have fun, and they were about to disappear off the face of the planet, and they would have never been found again. And that airline person saved those girls' lives. This is something that you've heard a lot. The airlines have been trying to crack down on human trafficking, and they've done a fairly good job. This story, though, this is not good because this is now you. Yeah, and I got to be careful because you want to err on the side of caution. But just listen, a father from Edina has been put in the spotlight on Delta Airlines by writing an open letter to its CEO, Ed Bastian, after he was accused of human trafficking following a flight with his daughter who has special needs. Peter Espinoza published a widely shared letter on LinkedIn Sunday, 2 days after his first-class flight from Minneapolis-St. Paul to Dallas, with his 20-year-old daughter who has a fragile X syndrome. They went to visit his son for Father's Day. FXS is a genetic disorder, and people with the disorder can suffer from anxiety and not making eye contact. All right? The Centers for Disease Control, and once again, this is it's probably a lesser condition, but it's got from very specific traits to it, and the dad knows how to deal with this. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say Espinoza notes people with FXS can also be easily overwhelmed, especially when questioned. Espinoza, who is the CEO of a tech company, Mortgage Cadence, and is a Delta Million Miler, wrote the letter that during their flight, the flight attendant noticed his daughter's anxiety became focused on interacting with her, asking her questions that made her daughter more anxious. Espinoza said he attempted to intervene, but the flight attendant insisted his daughter answer. Okay. When Espinoza said she couldn't, the flight attendant asked her, "Do you only speak Spanish?" and then confirmed his last name was Espinoza. When they landed in Dallas, Espinoza said he was met by four Dallas police officers who were arresting him for human trafficking. So here's where your mistake is. You don't have evidence, flight attendant, that there was human trafficking. You have a young lady who is dealing with a very serious disease, this FXS, that you clearly do not understand or know. But somehow you made the jump, oh, this is clearly human trafficking, because, and I can say this, because you called the cops. That was a mistake. Now, you can, I don't know, you know, maybe she said, "I think it's there. I think it's a concern. We should probably check this out." Maybe she did that and the cops overreacted. But the fact that the four officers there, they're saying, "We're arresting you for human trafficking," leads me to believe they were told a story by the flight attendant. "I now realize what it's like to be falsely accused minority parent fighting for my freedom, fighting for my child," he writes. He explained to the police officers who he was and the person who was flying with his daughter, asking the police to ask Delta to look him up. "I'm hurt and angry to tell you," the Dallas police responded, "that it was Delta personnel who had contacted them and accused him. They said then he was the human trafficker." Espinoza wrote Bastian. He said human trafficking has become a big issue, but that was quickly obvious to him that his set of flight attendants had not been properly trained. Espinoza said the entire situation could have been avoided if Delta cared about special needs travelers or if the flight attendants hadn't racially profiled them, which they sound like they kind of did. "It's pretty clear to me this would not have happened if your flight attendant hadn't viewed me as Hispanic, along with the preconceived negative notions that accompanied this. An anxious 20-year-old accompanied by a Hispanic male old enough to be her father must be a human trafficker," Espinoza writes. Espinoza said he attempted to intervene, but the flight attendant insisted his daughter answer, which you're out of line there, flight attendant. When Espinoza said he couldn't, the flight attendant asked her, "Do you only speak Spanish?" and then confirmed his last name was Espinoza. So, if you choose to continue to disregard the needs of your special needs flyers, you can continue to racially profile your customers, but at least I'm free to choose another airline for my family and I use when we travel, Espinoza wrote in closing.
Delta is investigating the incident and reaching out to Espinoza directly to better understand the difficult situation he described as our investigation. The airline said in the statement to bring me the news, there's nothing more important than keeping our customers safe, and that includes creating a safe, comfortable environment for all customers, especially those with disabilities. While Delta people remain highly engaged in the ongoing fight against human trafficking, we remain committed to ensuring our customers with disabilities feel supported. You seem to be kind of failing pretty badly there, Delta, on that one. Delta says it's more than 56,000 of its employees to recognize the signs of human trafficking, noting there is an estimated 25 million human trafficking victims worldwide, many of whom transported in airplanes. And once again, this is a hard story to read because there are a lot of airline personnel who indeed have stopped human trafficking. But here are some problems here. Now, I think when you get on board, well, first of all, you're going through an airport. It's not like you don't have IDs. I mean, you should be able to show the ID or your passport for yourself and your daughter. They should be pretty clear that they are, oh, this is your daughter. Oh, okay, thank you. And if nothing more, I mean, most of us have a cell phone. You pull out your cell phone and say, well, here's my daughter from when she was 10, and here and I am looking like this. It should be pretty clear, and at no point did the flight attendant try to say, well, maybe I am wrong here. Do you have any photos of you when you were a kid? Oh, that's great. And then they could have diffused the whole thing. Now, the flight attendant screwed up here because it sure does seem like the flight attendant said, he's Spanish. That means this has got to be a human trafficking thing. And when he tried to explain to her she has the condition that she has, which causes her to be more anxious, that she made, aha, gotcha. And that's a leap she should not have made. And that phone call she made to the Dallas police should not have been made. This guy, I'm sorry, I think you got a case, sir. Sue the living daylights out of him because that is unacceptable. And it's hard to say that, but here's the deal. If you want to do this, which for the most part you're doing an okay job at, if it goes wrong, guess what? It goes wrong horribly, like in this case with Mr. Espinoza. So, apologize, do whatever it takes, and just hope that Delta doesn't get sued into oblivion. 952-946-6205, hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, hour number two of the show today. Matt, Brett Johnson stepping on in here with us and Patrick. I am taking a week off. I'll be back next. I'm back on July 1st, right before the Independence Day holiday. We've got, once again, a lot of great people are stepping up and helping me out, correct?
Yeah, well, I am among them, along with along with Todd Mickelson, who will be filling in as well.
I was talking about Todd, actually.
Yeah, yeah. 4 of the days. We got great fill-in hosts, but 2 of them, you know, a little dicey.
You and Todd, thank you very much. I appreciate
Absolutely.
You guys doing that. And like I said, we'll be back on July 1st, on July 1st show. Actually, Burrell's coming back. I got Burrell on today. Burrell's coming back for them because he's doing some headline over at the Mall of America. So, and this is, I think, the first time he's doing that. So this is cool stuff. I'm glad for him. And then also Stein. I convinced Stein to come out of his Iowa Wednesday show over to Thursday next week. So we'll do it. We'll have him on that way.
Well, are we still going to be able to play the song on a Thursday or won't that work?
Well, I think that works.
Yeah, yeah. We and don't have a Wednesday verse in there.
Oh, I'll just realize I got Sven too. Well, I have Sven Sundgaard that day. It's going to be, I got to mail it in. Why am I even coming back on that Thursday?
We can just record your questions now and they can respond however they choose.
We'll mail it in. That's a week. That's July 1st. Be here for the midday show. I'm like, am I really here? I don't know. So I got a weird story for you. Do you remember that guy that went and stole the coronavirus vaccines, and they tracked him down?
Oh, the Wisconsin guy, right?
Yeah, well, he doesn't seem to have a permanent address at this point. We posted about Albert Lea, the Albert Lea interchange. This is two stories are about to come together like 2 minutes in one. The interchange. This is the coffee shop down in Albert Lea where Lisa Hansen, this is the woman that fled to Iowa to try to avoid being summoned because she kept breaking the coronavirus, you know, rules in regards to keeping a business open. She and she's guilty as all the day is long. I mean, she's got a lot of, you know, and she went after local officials and stuff. Then she lied about the sheriff, and she's not making a lot of friends. Well, she's got a new one. Those two apparently are working together. Bluestem Prairie has a picture. I saw this picture and I was like, you've got to be kidding me. It's Lisa Hansen from the interchange and the anti-vaxxer
is this is the guy that basically went out there and was Thomas Humphrey, who stole the vaccines. Now, let me read from the story here a little bit. She was back in court. She was in court yesterday in Dodge County. And the fellow at the left of the photo posted on the Facebook page is Waseca Patriot and auto dealing shop owner Keith Haskell, who apparently must be bankrolling him. The other guy in the photo is Hansen's husband. But there's another guy in this. An anti-vaxxer has been going around stealing the vials of Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine, proclaiming that it's poisonous and urging people to turn their backs. In a bizarre story, a guy named Thomas Humphrey turned the camera on himself, showed him for his vaccine appointment at a CVS in Minnesota. And then basically he warning people that it was toxic, that they should put their sleeves down. And he basically stole the vaccines. It's been a lot of coverage. Dina Winter in Minnesota Reformer, she talked about St. Paul Sovereign Citizen records himself stealing vaccines. In the St. Paul Pioneer Press, Nick Ferrano's St. Paul anti-vaxxer now charged with posting videos stealing vaccines. The National Action Task Force, Humphrey and Haskell, wear the shirts of the photo of the pop of this page, has since described itself as a press release posted in the Interpress Surveillance News Agency. It is a grassroots movement gaining traction to help restore the rule of law and respect for the Constitution. NATIF is a decentralized national network of volunteer investigators who are dedicated to identifying unconstitutional activity. Where this comes together is Humphrey apparently showed up for Hansen's court case yesterday in Albert Lea in Dodge County. Tried to record it, which you can't do. And I'm not going to play the video. You've got to see this video because this is crazy. He keeps telling these officers, I'm guessing it's Dodge County Sheriff's officers, that I can do this, I can do this, you're breaking the law, you're breaking the law, I can do this, I can do this. And then he finally admits, well, I'm going to be able to do this. I don't think it works that way. He also keeps saying it's my courthouse. Now, that he is, I don't know if he has a permanent address at this point. He's last listed as St. Paul. I know he's also had some interactions with Wisconsin, but your county courthouse is where you reside. Maybe he does reside in Dodge County. I don't know. But this is where they're at. These people, we are talking about the fringe of the fringe. And how desperate is it that Lisa Hansen's teaming up with him? And here he is down there trying to make a scene there. You've got to see the video. He posted it up online. I'm hesitant to do it because this guy likes the attention. But this is crazy. But when I go back to the whole thing about the Republicans and you watch this whole filibuster thing going on, these are the people I think that the Republican Party of Minnesota is most terrified of, because these are the people that show up for these primaries. So they have to look like they are the absolute, you know, insane, caffeinated, you know, randomly electric shocked howler monkey exhibit. So they basically appeal to these people saying, yeah, I like the cut of their jib. It's nuts. How do you even – what social media site are you guys connecting on?
That's a good question. How did they find each other? Yeah.
How is swipe – am I supposed to swipe left or swipe right? I think it's swipe left. Yeah,
I think swipe life is, or swipe left is for the people you don't like.
Yeah, okay. I'm doing it right then. Okay, yeah. Thank God. Wow. That would explain a lot of things. Yeah. Is there a secret? Oh, God, I want on it if it exists. Is there a secret social media website we don't know about? Where it's basically it gets like, you know, Loonbin Central. And, you know, we can go in there and it's like, yeah, I like putting alfalfa in my pants. All right, now swipe right on you. I'm going to keep you in my file.
That's got to be a thing where some right-wing figure needs to come up, yeah, with one of those like swipe left or swipe right things, but for Trump supporters. Imagine like if Hannity or someone did that, or Tucker Carlson.
Well, so far these guys haven't been too good with social media sites. It does bring up an interesting point. And Scott Jensen, who once again seemed sane at one point when we were doing the whole Alex Smith insulin bill. I mean, that was his bill. Mm-hmm. He's gone off. He's all in the Lisa. I think he's down the Lisa Hansen exchange down there. And has he endorsed this guy that tried to steal the vaccines? I don't know if he's endorsed the crime, but I know he's been very anti-vaccine. Has he actually praised this guy? Do we know if he's done anything like that?
That'd be something to watch for a guy who very well might be the front runner for the Republicans for governor.
God, you know, that's the crazy part is that Gazelka, as long as that guy like that is in there, unless someone like Mary Franson or Grunhagen, Draz, one of these really out there, Eric Mortensen. Well, the Republican Party has kicked him out. I don't think he can run as a Republican, really.
Oh, I think he would. He would have more than a good chance of winning the endorsement, or not the endorsement, but the primary for the Republicans for governor if he wanted to.
Could he? The question is, would the Republicans allow him? Remember what they did with Michelle McDonald at the state fair booth that one year?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They had a...
They blocked her from getting into the GOP booth, but she still became the nominee, which was a precursor of this whole thing.
Wouldn't that just be amazing if he's leading in every Republican primary poll and they don't let him have any part of the party? They try to keep him out. They do the Michelle McDonald treatment.
Here's the problem with Mortensen for them. You're right. Hansen wouldn't. You know, the vaccine stealer guy. If they decide to run for the primary for the Republican side, they wouldn't win it. But Mortensen's been a rep. Mm-hmm. And like Jensen's been a senator that gives them provenance. And as long as they have the slimmest of toe holds they can stick to, they'll go with it. That's terrifying. That's terrifying if you're a Republican, but explains why Kurt Doubt's Kurt Doubt. So
it explains a lot. Yeah, yeah. You were mentioning Scott Jensen. Yeah, he used to be a relatively sane state senator, and then a couple of years ago, just completely kowtowing.
I think far right. I think he knew exactly what he needed to do to win that appointment. Who do we have? We got Kevin Featherly today, right?
Kevin Featherly, indeed, is going to be stopping by as we're going to be talking about what police reform measures could possibly make their way to some final bills right now, because conflicting reports from Republicans as to which bills DFLers have actually agreed on with them. So,
but the funny thing, if you say about the public safety bill, not one person has said the public safety bill is anywhere close to being finished right now.
Yeah. That's where we're going.
All righty. Kevin Featherly joins Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon, as we have lots of news to be talking about from the Capitol, as well as some legal cases. And no better person to do that than Kevin Featherly, who used to be the Capitol reporter for Minnesota Lawyer, but now has started his own venture with a reporting company called Session Law that will be reporting on the latest from the Capitol and also some legal cases from around Minnesota. Kevin, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about this new venture you've started, Session Law, which is going to be, I guess, kind of doing some of the similar work you used to do for Minnesota Lawyer, but it will be a little bit different as well. So tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they follow your work over at Session Law.
Well, I'm going to be even more focused, I think. It's Session/Law. That's a pun that I'm not even going to bother to describe. You can read about it if you want to go to my about.
It is fun to read about. I actually did. Yeah, it's worth the read to kind of get the background why you chose that name. But yeah, people, that'll be a little teaser that people can find on your website.
Yeah. Yeah, it will be. It's a subscription website, and I'm not going to give proprietary information, but I can say that I'm pleased with the progress. I really only rolled it out publicly last Monday. Had a few subscribers already, just based on direct contacts, word of mouth kind of thing. But it has grown significantly, and I've even got some paid subscribers. It eventually will be, I don't know if it'll ever be a fully paywalled site, but there will be a paywall that I'll be putting up at some point in probably the near future. So now's the time. If you want to get on the introductory rate and if you want all that stuff, you can lock that in early. But it is going to be similar to what I did before. I'm going to really laser in hard. Even harder than I did at Minnesota Lawyer, I think, on the Judiciary Committee, the Data Practices Committee, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, the Public Safety Committee in the House, things like that, the Judicial Council. I'm really going to focus in those areas. My target audience is lawyers, legislators, lobbyists, and all the folks out there who have some similar interests, who care about similar things, the sort of intersection between the judicial and the legislative, so that's the strategy. Hopefully it works. So far, so good.
Yeah, and I think it's important to do too, because, at least even recently, there's fewer and fewer media outlets that are even covering what's happening with the courts or the state legislature. And normally, when we do see reporting on it, it's usually from one of the big media outlets where it's not quite in-depth coverage that you might provide. So I think it's a good resource to have out there. And yeah, I encourage people to follow your work over at session/law, and I'll let you give the contact information out there for people that are interested in checking out Session Law. But yeah, there's going to be a lot of good information out there, and we're going to be talking about some of the stories you've been working on. But how can people get to the website for the session/law?
I'm going to speak slowly. You may want to write this down because you have to have the https://. In front of it, otherwise apparently it leads you to the dark web somewhere. I don't even know what it does, but you don't get to my site if you don't have that there. But having achieved that, it then is Session Law, one word, sessionlaw.substack.com. This is a Substack project that, of course, is become famous now as a place where writers can put out newsletters and write independently and choose to do the work they want to do and maybe even get paid for it.
Gotcha. And, well, if you can't remember the whole URL, another easy way to do it is just go to Kevin Featherly's Twitter feed, and you'll find the link to the website on his Twitter feed. He is at Kevin Featherly, again, at Kevin Featherly on Twitter. All right, well, let's dive into some of the stories you've been working on, and being that the legislature is currently in a special session trying to put together some final bills before that July 1st deadline, got to talk about what's being debated on police reform, because the House has a number of proposals that would change the way policing is done in Minnesota, while the Senate doesn't have quite as many. Now, Kevin, you had a chance to speak to both of the bigwigs that are on the Judiciary Committees in both the House and the Senate. Can you tell us a little bit about what these bills have been that we've been seeing from both sides, from both the Senate and the House, and especially that Senate side? Because, as I understand it, they only have 6 proposals they've made on police reform, while the DFL has close to 100 or even more.
Right. They have more than 100, or at least they had more than 100 in the regular session omnibus. At a certain point in early May during the regular session, the DFL narrowed that down to 12. Whether that offer remains in force is somewhat a point of confusion and maybe even disagreement. I'm not entirely certain about that. Senator Limmer suggested that they actually are coming at him with the full bill again. But really, the Senate in many ways holds the cards here, because they can say no. There has to be an agreement. The bill has to go forward with concord so that, when it goes to the two floors, the same bill is being voted on and then goes to the governor. But here, as far as police reform goes, it is 6. There are 5 offers that Senator Limmer has either proffered himself or that he's accepted from House language from the regular session bill. One of the important ones is the business about extremist cops. The House had, and this is actually a point of disagreement, or at least it was as of late last week. There have been negotiations continuing since then, and I'm not privy to those at this point. But the House had a provision to have the Peace Officer Standards and Training Board write a model policy that would eliminate, bar anybody associated with white supremacist groups from being part of the police force. Senator Limmer said that he accepted that but rewrote it so that it would talk about, quote-unquote, extremist groups. And the House is saying there's no way. They're not doing that. Representative Mariani said, the issue is precisely white supremacy, and he doesn't want to change the bill to avoid that name. And you can understand perhaps why, because what's an extremist? Who are we identifying in that case? It does kind of broaden things, and, that does make for some difficulty. The idea of having public assemblies, the House wanted, again, another post-board policy that would protect the First Amendment rights of protesters. And they have accepted that. I guess it's been watered down a little bit, but to a point where the House can still accept it. And there are a few other things along those lines. I don't know how much detail you want to get into beyond that, but that's a flavor of what is happening and what's being discussed. There is a third we'll call it the 6th, but there are 5 offers from Senator Limmer. There's one that appears to me, at least, to have come from leadership as opposed to coming out of these negotiations. It sort of seems like leadership has imposed this one, and that is a provision to equip conservation officers with body cams. And, you know, Mariani says that's fine legislation, he'll accept it, but it doesn't go nearly as far as some of the things that House DFLers wanted to do, such as make sure that if someone is killed by police, their family has access to those body cam recordings within 48 hours, policies along those lines. This is really just fulfilling one department's request, and it really doesn't have any connection to anything that the community's asking for.
Yeah, and looking through that, I'm not surprised that at least among the leadership of the DFL and the Republicans, as you said, this is from the leadership and not necessarily from the public safety committees, this agreement that would require the State Patrol to wear body cams. I can certainly understand why they were thinking they need to include that when you had, of course, the shooting of Winston Boogie Smith by U.S. Marshals, who did not have body cams on at that time. When looking at this agreement that leadership has apparently reached, do we know when cameras are going to be required to be on for State Patrol officers?
Well, you're conflating things a little bit, I think. I asked Senator Limmer about this, and his understanding of that proposal, at least from leadership, is that this is strictly about DNR, conservation officers. This isn't about State Patrol officers. There is language in the transportation bill, however, I know, that deals with state trooper body cams. That's going to move to the floor probably on Wednesday. That's not part of this proposal. That's an interesting one, though, because one of the things that Brian Bask at NPR noticed yesterday is that bill includes body cams for the Capitol security force, the state troopers at the Capitol. So I guess I'm hoping they'll put a sign on their, you know, over their name saying, smile when you say that. We'll be having our picture taken.
Yeah, most certainly. I want to go back to some of the other agreement, or not necessarily agreements, at least the ones that Republican senators are saying that they tentatively have agreements on. Another one is this law called, well, Travis's Law, which would require 911 dispatchers to refer mental health crisis teams to emergency calls when appropriate and not only the police. As this stemmed from a case a little while back from Travis Jordan, who was a 36-year-old killed by police in 2018. When his girlfriend notified authorities that he threatened suicide, and allegedly Jordan confronted the responding officers with a knife and was shot. And it sounds like this could be a part of a final agreement between the House and the Senate, but it also sounds like that Carlos Mariani from the DFL thinks that while he accepts the bill, he thinks it might be a little bit watered down from what advocates of the family originally wanted, correct?
Not quite. He actually says there's no agreement here. Because what the Senate wants in this case, they want to water it down by inserting the language where available. So the services you described, you know, if they would dispatch a mental health team with police in the case where somebody, for instance, is threatening suicide, Senator Limmer wants to put in where available, the idea being that not all counties are even going to have access to these services. They're not going to be able to provide them. So if it's in statewide legislation that demands it, that would put them in the bind. Representative Mariani said no deal. They want to water that down. That's not what the advocates and the family of the guy who was killed have asked for. He's not accepting that as is. I mean, they may get it in there, but they'll have to further hone that down and come to some kind of agreement, which, you know, right now it's hard to say how they would do that.
And as you had conversations with Mariani as well, I think one of the themes that I was kind of picking up on is that he's afraid that so many of these Republican bills that have been proposed are basically pro law enforcement and not so much in terms of making sure that they help the public at large. Was that kind of the reading you were getting too, at least talking to Mariani?
I think that he feels that the Senate Republicans are really sort of emphasizing the needs of law enforcement over the needs of the particularly the BIPOC community. Yes, I think that's right.
All right, Kevin, we are just about out of time. But one more thing before we And by closing out our interview here, Kevin, give us one more time the contact information again for Session Law, the new website that you're going to be covering Minnesota politics and, well, the and a lot of court cases in Minnesota. Tell us again where people can expect from the website and where people can go and follow along with your work.
We are dealing with the intersectionality between the judicial and the legislative, and that means following what happens at the legislature that affects courts, and following at the courts, the ways that the laws passed at the legislature are being either interpreted or challenged or applied. So that's sort of the mission statement. The unhelpfully long URL is https://forgive me. Here's the rest of it. sessionlaw.substack.com.
Also find him on Twitter, Kevin, at Kevin Featherly. That's another way you can find a link to that website, as you'll be able to find his latest work. Or if you're having trouble even finding his Twitter feed, just Google Session Law Kevin Featherly. You'll find his Twitter feed, then a link to that website, again, for Session Law, for the latest in Minnesota politics and also some legal cases working their way through the Minnesota courts. Kevin, as always, appreciate the time today. Good chatting with you.
Thank you.
Hey, let's take a break and turn things back over to Matt McNeil here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Welcoming back to the show one of my favorite guests, Robert Burrill, comedian extraordinaire, who's going to be... Robert, where are you going to be... You're going to got a big run coming up here at the end of the month and into July, right?
Yes, I will be headlining at Acme in Minneapolis.
Nicely done, my friend. So you're at Acme.
Yeah, well, I mean, I got some very compromising photos with Lewis, the owner, when he was staying at a hotel in Russia. And, you know, everyone goes about climbing the comedy ladder differently. And after a while, I just got fed up with trying to do things honestly, and blackmail was my ticket.
You figured out the secret of all great comedians. Well done. Finally, it's kicked in. So,
yep.
Congratulations on this. I think you start your run at Acme on June 30th?
Yes, Wednesday, June 30th through Saturday, July 3rd. So right before America celebrates its Independence Day, you can catch me doing my thing.
If you want to get inspired about burning things and blowing things up, well, I got a show for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
I should mention, that's one of the reasons why we're having Robert on. I'm not going to be here on the 30th. I wanted to have him on the first day, but that's why I'm having him on today. We'll have you actually back on again, I believe, on July 1st. We'll have a show with you as well and try to get those other shows sold out. I can't tell you. Headlining at Acme, nicely done. I should mention as well, too, you got your albums out, including you were one of the few people that put out a comedy album last year. Very much appreciated the 2020 album. I did appreciate that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, technically, my contribution was half the album. The other half goes to Brian Miller, another very funny comic out of Minneapolis. We went halvesies on an album with just all materials completely relegated to 2020 stuff, Zoom meetings, and all that kind of stuff. So hopefully there's a shelf life to it, because I feel like we're still not out of it yet. But even for a few years, then it'll take on more of a nostalgic tone, and people will still get the references and stuff. But,
absolutely.
But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, are you – obviously, you're running an Acme here, but, I mean, as a comedian, you're on the road a lot. I mean, have you started – I mean, how many shows are you starting to do? Are you starting to get out and do some tours around the country, around the Midwest?
Summer's kind of light. I have some pop-up gigs, but then the fall it kind of picks up again. I've been fortunate enough where I have a podcast with my buddy Steve Gillespie. It used to be called Writer's Block, and now it's Comedy Mainline, and it's still basically just working on jokes with comics, but it's on the Helium podcast network, and Helium is a chain of clubs throughout the country, and I've been able to get in there. So I was at Portland about a month or two ago, and that was a lot of fun. And I'm actually doing my next album at the Helium in Indianapolis in November. So I have a little run at Good Nights in Raleigh, North Carolina, and the St. Louis Helium, and yeah, so I'm starting to do more Midwest headlining through those clubs and those opportunities.
When you do go on out and you do this, I mean, how is it? Is it relief that people can go back out and see a show like this? Are they back to heckling? Is it back to normal? Or is it still a little apprehensive on the crowd?
I mean, from what I've seen, everyone's ready just get back to normal and laugh and coming out. And I'm excited because acne, this will be the first time that I've done acne in about a year and a half where it'll be at full capacity.
Nice.
Acne, to their credit, stayed open as much as they could. They adhered to every guideline, but it was a little frustrating as a comic who's used to, because it's one of the best clubs in the country, and you do it when it's sold out, and you feel like a rock star. You're like Jimmy Page up there, and you're like, oh, yeah. But then you do it in front of, like, 10 people, and it's still going well, but you're like, this isn't the same thing. This is right now. I can't name a guy from Air Supply. I would if I could, but that would be the rest of the analogy.
That's the tough part if you're in a club that's, because comedy clubs, obviously, every comedy club I've been to is there, people are just kind of piled on top of each other, but that makes a great environment. And so when you have social distancing, I can just see the one guy in the corner, and everyone else kind of just staring at you, some kind of German avant-garde piece.
Yeah, I don't know what it says about comedy that it thrives in the same environment as a virus, but I'll leave that to each and every person to come up with the conclusion on their own. But yeah, fortunately, it's now back to full capacity, so I want as many people to come out as they can, and it's kind of a twofer because the first half of the show, I'm emceeing the whole thing Vegas style, but the first half of the show is a showcase with all of the new MCs Acme hired just a few months ago. Wow. Ira Ford, Elise Cole, James Stanley, and Sean Napstedts. They're all going to do their best 10 minutes and get a videotape out of it. And then when that's done, I headline the rest of it.
Well, and I'm so glad you are because your stuff has been great. Yeah, I've just loved watching how your career has blossomed because you definitely have got a lot of ability and a lot of talent here. Are you concerned at all that you don't have the easy punching bag anymore? I mean, does it sharpen your comedy when you do this podcasting on Helium that you're talking about comedy writing? I mean, one of the things I appreciate about good comedians is it doesn't matter. Sometimes you take the easy joke, but sometimes they appreciate it when it's a tougher situation. You got to work the line. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. I mean, I try to focus more on issues or particular news stories. So I'm not coming from a complete partisan lens. So the average audience member is like, oh, look at this lefty communist up here. You know, spitting on everything great about America. Whereas I'll take like an issue, like the rioting at the Capitol. Or, any kind of, that's like what my biggest chunk is, but like race relations, stuff like that, like issues that are kind of heavy, but then like finding a silly aspect of it and doing that. So it's not necessarily partisan. I don't need to be talking about Trump anymore. I'm ready to, I think I might have one or two Trump jokes, but, there's some funny stuff about Biden too. And anyone that tells you they can't do it, they're just like lazy or don't want to, because you can make fun of almost any president.
Now, and when you said Portland, I'm presuming Portland, Oregon, as opposed to Portland, Maine. But, you know.
Yes. Portland, Oregon. Yeah, went hard at the cops in Portland. They liked it.
Because you do have a different audience. You know, you can bring up the liberal stuff in Portland, but you get to Indianapolis and say, let's talk about the 1-6 insurrection. Yes, do it again. And you're like, whoa, really? Okay.
Well, it turns out, Matt, that you can make fun of Minneapolis cops anywhere. Because
really?
Even in rural areas, they're like, well, our cops aren't like that. Because they're not. Because it's the, you know, your son played baseball with the cop. Like, they're not like that. So I found that if I stick to just the Minneapolis police, everywhere you can go after them.
Yeah, and you get the biggest laughs in town too, which actually, you know, if you're going after
them. Well, yeah, and it's only fitting if the bit is on the Minneapolis Police Department that I would come out firing.
Yeah.
You know, that's my homage.
Okay, I want everyone listen right now. June 30th, July 1st, July 2nd, July 3rd. A lot of people are going to be off that week anyway. You want to laugh. You want to get back to normalcy. Robert Burrill is one of my favorite comedians, period. He is an absolutely outstanding individual. You're at Acme. Is it the Acme website they should go to get the tickets for this?
Yep, acmecomedycompany.com.
Acmecomedycompany.com. I'll link to all this stuff. I'll even try to track down your podcast and link to that a little bit later on.
Oh, I would love that. Thank you. Or maybe one of the albums if you want to do 2020, get a taste of the material.
And I recommend all of his albums. I got all your albums on iTunes. They're fantastic, very funny, some very good stuff there. So get his albums. We'll get the podcast. We'll get the tickets. Go see the concert, and then I'll check. check in with you on July 1st. We'll see how things are going. We'll see if you're doing the rest of the shows. And we'll talk about July 1st, 2nd, and 3rd there. Robert, congratulations. So happy for you at Acme coming up here later this month and into July. And all my best. We'll talk to you in a few weeks, okay?
Thanks, man. I appreciate all the support you've given me over the years. It means a lot.
Well, you always will have it because you're a fantastic comedian. Thank you, Robert Barile. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll wrap up the show with one more. I got Mike Lindell. I got to get to Lindell again. Again. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Claire Ferreira, president and owner of Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, here to share some information about our 5 for 25 drive program. We ask customers to take 5 minutes to review their experience with us and $25 to a local nonprofit of their choice. So far, our 5 for 25 drive has raised close to $50,000. Thanks to all of you out there who've taken part in this.
Anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stallion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stallion.
Hey, it's Tom. Solar power can change your home for the better, and it's more accessible than ever before. All Energy Solar provides free, no-obligation, virtual consultations, and there are financing options available for those who qualify. Plus, federal incentives can pay for up to 26% of your cost, and there are local incentives as well. Some of those incentives are sunsetting soon. Many local incentives are only available on a first-come, first-served basis, so now's the time to go green with All Energy Solar. AllEnergySolar.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Catch Barile. I mean, if you have been a long-time listener, okay, so Patrick, let's go through the timeline here of the Matt McNeil Show and all of its incarnations on this radio station. Did the 6 p.m. hour first, then we did the morning grind, 6 a.m. to 8 a.m., then we did the 3 o'clock hour, and now we've been put into this 4 to 6 o'clock hellscape that is your afternoon drive. Howdy! Drive safely! Road blow! Anyway. And we had him. He was one of my first guests. And as a matter of fact, he wasn't the guest. It was the comedy club owner was the guest. He was running some ads on the stage. And he said, I'm going to bring one of my comedians by. And he brought this brand new comedian, Robert Barile, out of Bemidji. Came on down here. I have followed his career ever since. We've had him on, I'm going to guess, what, 30 times? He's done Blue State Balls with us. We've had him out at events with us. He's fantastic. And he did a show here on the station for many years, too. It was great. And to see him now headlining at Acme, brilliant, my friend, brilliant. So go get some tickets. Go see that. That's fantastic. Thank you, by the way. I want to make sure we give credit here. I'm not going to get into it again today because it's just too heartbreaking if you want to know the truth. The decision my family has made, we have left the Catholic Church after the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops decided to turn the Catholic faith into a weapon against Joe Biden. I've had enough here. This is just too much, especially as they snuggle up to Republicans who have basically abandoned the entire Gospel of Matthew out of their Bibles. But I've had multiple people here reach out to the station. Lots of ways to get in touch with us. AM950radio.com is the email. You can message us on the Facebook page is, of course, Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. On Twitter, you can get in touch with me there. Suggesting church options as we move away from the Catholic faith after what the Catholic bishops did. Thank you. I'm a little flattered, as a matter of fact, by the amount of invites I've had here. This is actually quite nice. Total at least 16 through some of the messaging services. So I will get to that eventually. I'm going to take some time. Like I said, my wife and I still have one or two things we have to work out, but yeah, we're done. And this is enough. And by the way, and I will say this, I think this is going to end up being a catastrophic mistake for the Catholic Church, because I know a lot of people that are leaving too. What some people are waiting for is if they actually put out the document, and they're saying that maybe they'll wake up, maybe the Pope Francis will do something if they put out the document. And once again, I love being Catholic. I love my church. I love the priests I've had. This is not an easy decision. You have to make your own choices. This is what we did. But thank you very much to all the people who are reaching out. And I would love to have your suggestions in regards to churches we should try, because we will start trying churches here before too long. All right? So thank you. Thank you very, very much. All righty. By the way, as expected, Senator Sinema and Senator Manchin are complete and total morons who for some reason do not understand. Well, I know. Okay. The reason why Manchin and Sinema are protecting the filibuster is because they are terrified of having to go on the record and vote the way they want to. Now, get rid of the filibuster, and I can say this about Joe Manchin or Kristen Sinema, the senators who basically are trying to make sure the Republicans have a way to derail everything Democrats do. And they're idiots and they're morons. But their real motivation is if the filibuster is in place, then they themselves never have to go in on record because they'll never hit the 60-vote threshold with that many Republicans. So they know that they never have to go on record with their actual vote. But you know what? I would rather have Joe Manchin because Joe Manchin wants to play both sides of the coin. He wants to say, sure, I'd vote for voting rights, or sure, I'd vote to preserve the infrastructure package. He wants to say that, but the reality is he doesn't want to vote for those things. But he can say that he would vote for them as long as the filibuster's in place. If the filibuster's not in place, then he might have to go on the record and vote against something, which is fine. That's his right to do so. But the reality is because he's a coward, because Joe Manchin is a coward and Kristen Sinema are cowards, they don't want to go on the record with their vote, and so they hide behind the filibuster. And I think it's time for us to primary him and get him out. And I'd rather, you know, I don't want to lose those seats because I think, but, you know, you can get good candidates to run, and especially in Arizona. I think after what the Republican Party is doing to themselves out there, I think the Democrats have an opportunity in Arizona. But enough's enough. And yeah, I'm tired of Joe Manchin, and it's time to remove him. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell assured his fellow Donald Trump fans their favorite president will soon be returned to office. The right-wing businessman spoke to a gathering of election, coronavirus, and QAnon conspiracy theorists in Tampa. Seriously, is there a social media site I'm missing here? He told the Restore America attendees, wait a minute. Okay. You went to a thing called Restore America in Tampa. Really? Are we holding America together with stripper glitter? I mean, I'm just asking. That's just a question. Tampa, where he told the Restore America he would soon unveil evidence of a cyber symposium that would force the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn the election and return Trump to office by fall, reported Right Wing Watch. What I'm going to do is get to this world. It's called the Cyber Symposium, he said. And what it is, I'm going to have a venue at the end of July. It's your job, everyone, to get to the world, out of the world. Get the word out to the world. We're going to get every cyber guy that has credentials. They're called CISSP credentials. They're going to be there. Well, or 1,000 people or so. I mean, somewhere around there. Lindell claims the election was somehow stolen using packet capture technology. He told fellow conspiracists the proof would soon be undeniable. You do understand a lot of ballots are paper. Well, never mind. We're bringing in all the cyber guys, Lindell said. They're all going to be there. We're going to bring all the media. Maybe even Fox will show up. What a concept. And then we're going to bring in all the senators and governors, even the corrupt ones, Brian Kemp, and legislators, secretary of states, every single government official that wants to be there, because when we show them these packet captures, they're going to just give them out to their cyber guys, and they're going to have their own guy go. How many votes were flipped here in Tampa? Here you go. Boom. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't Florida vote for Trump? So are you saying Florida went for Biden? So you're saying votes were flipped in Tampa, a state that Trump won. Okay. It's going to be a worldwide event, he added. Millions are going to see it. And those Supreme Court justices are going to look at it then, and they're going to go 9-0. That's the country that was attacked. The election's going to come down. Donald Trump will be in office by fall for sure. You know, if you have not watched it, and I mentioned this yesterday, I believe it was, the Jordan Klepper Daily Show event. And I mentioned this with Greg Bakken when we were talking with Ghost Box Radio, and how how the reference to the Sasquatch shows is quite literally the perfect analogy for Mike Lindell. Because, and we've talked about it for years on this show, Sasquatch shows are the easiest things in the world. You basically just go out in the woods, act like everything you hear is a Sasquatch, never have to show anyone a Sasquatch, say, do we finally have definitive proof of a Sasquatch? And by the end of that show, you say, no, it was a beaver. And you say, but maybe next week. And next week it starts off with the ominous music and the shadowy creature. And is it this? And that week, it's a bear. And it's never a Sasquatch. They have had Sasquatch shows for 20 years, and they have yet to catch a Sasquatch. That is Mike Lindell and this never-ending... It's going to be 20 years down the road. I got another packet of information. Oh, God bless him. We'll have to see how this goes. Good luck in Tampa. Mike, have a good rest of the week. I will be back on July 1st. Have a wonderful time. Thanks to all the people that are going to be filling in. Native Roots Radio, they are up next. Have a wonderful rest of your Tuesday. Until I talk to you next time. See ya.